Hey, welcome back, everybody. Jump on board as we follow the All Over the Map family on their all over the world adventure, searching for their one and only true home. And today, well, they're feels like they're home a little bit here. They're on a relaxation version of the trip here as they recuperate from the last wild adventure. Welcome back, Michael and Caitlin Domner. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be here today.
It's funny. We were talking offline, and I said, okay, every day I'm wondering, every week, what's the topic of today? You just saw something big. You went and saw one of those bucket list places that most of us can only dream about or watch on National Geographic. You went to the Galapagos. And as I'm thinking to myself, what are we going to talk about as you come back from that? I said, it's got to be kind of, let's take a deep breath. We've seen something wild. We left the planet Earth temporarily and went out into a fairy tale existence way out in the ocean. And that was kind of my feeling here. Little did I know it's even more of a rest and recuperation visit here. Talk a little bit about what happened in those last days of the Galapagos here.
Yeah. So Bradley and I went to, like, we had a local restaurant after, so I think it was Thursday, and we went on this bay tour and we explored the tuneles, which is the lava tunnels.
We got to snorkel with sharks and turtles. It was an amazing day.
Still sounds like a bucket list day to me here. Okay. All right.
And then came lunch.
So we asked our guide for just a local recommendation. He's like, oh, I'm going to my favorite restaurant. You can join me. And so we sit down and we order food, and Bradley and I and Jackson get the seafood soup, which is the first course.
Right.
And we take a sip and it's peanut seafood soup, which just, it did not strike our taste buds particularly well, but I'm like, you know, we're trying to try new things, learn things. So let's eat more of it. So Jackson took one bite of a shrimp and said, no, thank you. And pushed the bowl away. And he's our adamantine kid. Like, we cannot make him move when he doesn't want to move.
Yeah. Right.
So, okay, fine. And then Bradley, he's a little bit more pliable. So we convinced him to eat a couple of his shrimps and sip a couple of spoonfuls of broth.
Right.
And I'm like, I have to set the example. I need to eat my entire bowl of soup.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. That was the worst decision ever. Like, Bradley and I were throwing up for the next 24 hours.
Oh, Jackson, my goodness.
Was feeling queasy. And then, like,
and your, like, and your son who went along, he's not going to listen to mom as much. The one who said no, he's probably the smartest one in the group. Yeah.
That'll teach him. Like, just don't listen to mom anymore.
Right. That's so what was it? Was it just, I mean, it's some kind of food poisoning or something. Did you go, you're throwing up? I mean, that's not good stuff here.
Because it started very quickly. I mean, that night they just both were terribly violently ill. I think I don't know if it was from that or something that just happened to be a crazy coincidence, but then Jackson and Cora and I also started to get sick. Had really bad diarrhea. I don't want to get too explicit, but it was just not fun at all. And so we were constantly we had two bathrooms in that place, and one was constantly in use with somebody else waiting at the door for the last day that we were there in the Galapagos Islands. But
and then miraculously we had like a reprieve where we were able to take our ferry, take our taxi, get on the plane, the 2-hour plane ride back to Quito, and get back to our hotel. And everybody was miraculously okay while we were traveling. It's like your body has this amazing ability to shut things down when it needs to.
For a little while, you can get through it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then for the last 4 or 5 days, everybody's had the runs again. And it's we don't know. Some people have said it could be the food poisoning.
It could be parasites.
It could be the altitude, because Quito is at like 8,500 feet.
I don't think it's the altitude. The fact that everybody's sick it's not the altitude.
But it's just, we've been hydrating like crazy. Fortunately, we are in the kind of upscale downtown area where there's this beautiful mega maxi shopping mall that's better than Costco, just 2 blocks from our house.
Walking through it, it was like walking through a dream. It was like
a dream
back in America again. They had like everything that we could possibly want.
Take that apart for a second here, because that's a funny comment, but there's some truth in that. And the truth is that we're Americans, and we, as much as we want to see the world, as much as you want them to be children of the world, we still take for granted that there's a drugstore nearby and that the police are there to protect us, not to rob us. Yeah. And that, you know, certain things, the world is going to follow a certain order. And when it does, it looks like a Disney movie. And when it doesn't, it looks like a disaster. And so here you are, having left paradise, and you literally come back and say, this looks like paradise.
it was like civilization. It's just such a stark contrast. I mean, when we're in Guatemala and the Galapagos, it feels like you go to these little tiendas. You have to go to different stores for different things, right? So you go to the meat market, you go to the the bread store, you go to the vegetables stand. So you have to go different places to go shopping, and like just coming back here and seeing the Mega Maxi, it's like walking into a Super Target or a Super Walmart, where they have everything from rowing machines to televisions to any groceries you could possibly want.
It's paradise. Forget the Galapagos, folks. We're living in paradise right now. We're living in a Walmart nearby and a Target down the street. That's paradise.
Take that level of convenience for granted when you're in the States, but here it feels like a miracle. And I think especially because we're sick, and I was just like, man, there's no way I would have the emotional and physical capacity to wander down dirt roads and uphills and downhills trying to pull together dinner for my family. I'm like, the fact that it was just all in one location, there was a Cinnabon, there was an orchid florist market.
Cinnabon. There we go. Now I'm feeling better. A Cinnabon. All right. So let's walk through this, because this really is real, folks. I mean, this has been a dream and a joy up till now. And there's been some missteps and some, somebody robbed us on the road. Oh, well, isn't this fun? Well, we'll always remember this adventure here. Nobody got hurt. They just held us up for some money, other things along the way gone. Now we're getting down to reality. And there's three realities I see here. One is the reality that you're out on the road, and once in a while, you got to stop. Not just to enjoy the view that you're racing by, just to relax. I always heard the stories of people who would try and do, 20 countries in 20 days in Europe or something like that. 12 countries in 12 days. And at some point, not only does your mind burn out, but your body burns out. So what's it feel like just to stop, and no need to go any place? Isn't any bucket list place to see today. Today is rest and relaxation. What's it feel like to rest on the road?
Yeah, I think it just feels, it feels necessary. So I think if we weren't sick, we probably would have kept the Amazon for this week. We would have been flying again.
You were going from one giant bucket list to the next. I expect, and then you're going to go to the South Pole, and you're going to go to the Himalayas. And let's see, by Tuesday, we're going to have seen the pyramids and,
Right. And I think if our bodies hadn't broken down, I think we probably would have tried to keep that pace. But I do think our bodies have their own wisdom. And I think whatever reason it happened, I think it was providential that there was a physical reason that we had to slow down.
Yeah. Now you have an excuse. I needed an excuse to do what I should do. Because I think that's traveling. That's the problem with traveling in a compressed period of time. Most of us only have a week or two to go try and see as much as we can. And then we're not going to do this for another year. Or maybe lucky if we do it twice a year. You're doing it twice a week. You're going from someplace to someplace to someplace. And you say you're going to do this for at least a year, maybe longer. Maybe we'll do this for 12 years. Maybe we'll do this the rest of our life. You know, I just wondered along the way, somewhere along the way, they're going to run out of gas. They're going to run out of steam. They're going to stop and say, I don't keep the waterfall. I just want to lay down today.
We found our home by default.
Yeah, right. Keto is our send the packages here. I always wondered
Another interesting thing that we kind of stumbled across this week is really the difference when we visit somewhere that we have a local contact. So when we're in Chichicastenango, we had our friend that met us and like showed us around, and it's just such a different feel when you're meeting people and talking to people and really making a good connection. And right. Caitlin made a friend in the Galapagos, and we just went to a dinner with her last night. And it just, when somebody who is very familiar with the place is there with you, a native, and they can tell you about things and they're bilingual, like you just get a different response from everything around you. And it was really cool. I actually met somebody who yesterday while I was at the Mega Maxi, I met a guy who is an expat from Texas, and he bought a rose farm down here, and he's lived down here for a few years now. Wow. I'm going to go to coffee with him tomorrow probably. And it's just kind of making those connections and people that you can really talk to and learn about the community and the area and that know it firsthand. It's really, I don't know, it makes the travel feel different when we have that level of a connection.
I'll bet. I'll hold off my other two questions for a moment. Let's talk about that. How do you meet people on the road? Because they know you're only here for, I mean, you meet them and they say, hi, how are you, sir? And can I show you around? And, you know, I mean, there's a casual connection you meet with people, but how do you really connect with people when you're only there for a moment?
Yeah, well, the gal that I met, Carolina, from in the Galapagos, we were on that same tour, that Thursday tour where we were going snorkeling, and she just happened to be sitting next to me. And I said, hola. And she said, hello. And I discovered that she spoke English, and that makes everything easier.
Right.
And so she's actually half Ecuadorian, half Chilean, and she lives in Mexico, but she's visiting her family, and she's very, very cosmopolitan. And so we were talking about her work. And we had like an hour long boat ride where we were going to the Los Angeles. And even with the boat's motor, we had enough that we could talk. She's in education. I'm writing my kids' books about world travel. And so we just really noticed that we had a lot in common. So then we shared WhatsApp numbers so we could keep in touch over WhatsApp, which is the app of choice south of I think outside of the United States.
Everybody says that. I've never even tried WhatsApp. But everybody says that's the
recommend.
One.
Okay. Yeah, because you can make phone calls over the internet. You can text people. I sent Carolina my location yesterday when she was coming by to pick us up in her taxi. It's really fantastic. And almost everybody in the world has access to it. So you can call somebody in Ecuador or Venezuela. And
without having any international charges because it's over data.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. All right. Mm-hmm. But again, let's go deeper in this. So I understand you got to ride, you got an hour to kill. Hey, you're sitting next to each other. Hola. Hey, who are you? And you're open because you're in an open state of mind when you're traveling. When you were back in Apple Valley or wherever you originally started off here, Happy Valley, California here. When you're back at the Walmart, I don't say hi to anybody. I'm there on a mission. I want to get in and get out. I already have my friends and my connections. I'm not looking to add to it, unfortunately, probably day by day. Right. I don't just start chatting with somebody at the gas station. If I do, it's very casual. Hey, nice car, whatever. But I don't suddenly, I can't remember the last time I formed a casual friendship from a casual meeting. It's usually somebody I worked with or somebody I lived next door to, or, you know, there's a deeper physical connection that starts the conversation. But you're now, you can't do that. You can't get to know your neighbor over 6 months. You're not working with somebody for 6 weeks. You're there for 6 minutes or 6 days. So what's it like to...
Not to mention that we're desperate for conversations.
Yes. There you go.
I love my husband and we have great conversations, but 4 months of one conversation partner, you're like, I'm going to make friends with the gasoline guy if that's the only person who'll talk to me.
Yes.
I think it's a level of kind of desire on our part to meet and get to know people. And it's approaching conversations with a level of intentionality that I mean, you know, when you're yes. just going through your normal day in Apple Valley, not, you know, you've got enough stuff keeping you busy. You don't, you're not thinking about other things, but when we're meeting new people, I feel like it's, it really is just a level of being of openness,
yes,
and being willing to have a deeper conversation, you know, in the first 20 minutes or 10 minutes that you meet somebody, than you would if you're kind of safe at home and didn't have that same level of desire.
I think you nailed it. I think that's what it is. I think it's a frame of mind. I find that even when I'm on an airplane or other things like that, where normally I wouldn't talk to anybody. I wouldn't feel the urge to talk to someone. Yeah, I'm fine. Sit down. Hi, how are you? But if you're stuck somewhere, you sort of throw a switch in your brain. I'm going to do what I don't normally do. I'm going to get outside of my bubble. I'm going to actually start reaching out to people and seeing who's open to a conversation. And I'm willing to take it further than I probably would with the guy at the gas station down the street on a normal day. So I think maybe that's an unforeseen. We'll track that as you go along, but I'll bet that's a different switch that when you're out on the road than when you're just literally in your home. Let's go back to my first two questions here. So your body's revolted and said, enough, slow down. And here you are in a place where you don't feel any urge, where suddenly it's paradise to have a supermarket nearby. I will tell you, and I'll see if you guys agree, I love traveling. The only time I hate traveling is when I'm sick. I've been really sick a couple of times out on the road. I talked about Hawaii once. And at that moment, I just want to be Dorothy. I want to click my heels and there's no place like home.
You're looking for you're really looking for comfort, yes, which is hard to find in a foreign environment. I think that's why, like, having a supermarket close by was so striking for us. Like, it was such a reassuring thing, is because that's comfort for us. Like, at home, that's what we would have. We could go and get some soup and be, yes, you know, feel better. So just that level of,
I could pull up with my blanket, my favorite little blanket, my only wear. I used to laugh. My father had a set of kind of weird worn out pajamas and a robe, and he only wore them when he got sick. When he put that on, my dad was a rock, but when he put that on, you didn't have to ask. Dad didn't feel good today. You know, there was something he found warm and fuzzy and comfortable about that. I think we're all looking for that, and it's hard to hold up. I remember reading a story, actually it was Gary Warner. I don't know why I remember the name, but he was a famous travel writer here in Southern California. And he talked about once, because that's just his life. He just went out, he'd go out, he'd see something, he'd come back. He didn't bring his family and his kids with him because they couldn't have, you know, it was a job. And he went to Vietnam and he got terribly sick, like hallucinogenic sick, like almost dying sick. And he's holed up in some little hovel someplace and trying to hang on. And he talked about, I thought, that's my worst nightmare. My worst nightmare is that I'm stuck somewhere in a hut and I'm dying. And, you know, now I feel like Marlon Brando up in the jungle in Apocalypse Now or something here. You know, is there a fear? Maybe I don't want to project my fear onto you, but there is a fear, and you got kids with you. It was the fear that, oh my God, we're going to get sick. And this isn't going to be fun. This is going to be scarier than it could be or should be because we're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I think that maybe is what I'll just say is, like, it's a blessing that we ended up getting sick in a modern city, the capital of a country. I think it would be a little different if we were in the Amazon. The flip side, though, is I recognize I've studied enough about Indigenous cultures to know that Indigenous cultures have a lot of remedies that we've kind of discounted with Western medicine.
Oh, like, sure.
Yeah. When we go to the Amazon, I guarantee that if we had diarrhea, there would be a plant.
Yes.
They might have to walk a couple hours to go find it, but there would be a plant that could cure my diarrhea. Right. So I think it's just, it's that balance of comfort, as Michael was saying, but also recognizing that everyone everywhere has gotten sick at some period of time and they have come up with solutions for it. Now, in this case, we have a clinic right down the street that if things continue, we will probably go and we will get antibiotics and we'll do like the normal American thing to clean out our system.
Yeah, because we might have a parasite. It might be something that's not going to go away. Right. I mean, this is not impossible to pick up a parasite outside of this country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's just recognizing that thankfully most situations were only an hour or two's flight from a modern hospital.
Right.
So if you can get to the airport and you can get on a plane, like you can get back to where you need to be. And so it's just that that's a modern convenience that, yeah, even 10 or 20 years ago may not have been the case that we really take for granted.
So let me ask you, I don't want to dwell on negatives because this is a fun story, but I've got to be people thinking this like me. What if it was serious? What if you broke a leg and you're in the jungle? What if you're, and I'm thinking, you know, things can go bad quickly. We've all read the story of Ashley Judd, the famous actress who loved to volunteer up in Africa at some, I don't know, chimpanzee place or apes or something. And it's way out in the middle of nowhere. And she'd gone there many, 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 many times. She felt very comfortable there. She knew the people there. But in the middle of the night, she woke up and she was walking around the beautiful starlight and she fell and broke her leg and it got severely infected. Like they almost had to amputate it. It was 3 hours down the mountain and 3 hours to someplace else. And by the time they get there, it's really bad. And she almost lost her leg. No, she didn't, thank goodness. But she thought what would have normally been a no big deal or turned into a life-threatening situation. Do you have contingency plans in place? Do you ever think about what, God forbid, if this really turned into a medical emergency, would you fly home? Do you go fly to the closest place? Any thoughts of any of that, or you're just fearless? You're young, you're fearless.
Yeah, we're not going to get hurt. we did purchase travel insurance for the year while we travel.
Okay.
So it is, and that includes, you know, emergency medical, even up to flights to the closest modern hospital facility.
Yeah.
So we definitely put some things in place to help protect us against that. As far as plans, I mean, I have some basic first aid training and that kind of thing. So anything that's like immediate emergency, we can probably handle most of it ourselves. If we don't have that facilities or whatever close by.
I mean, we're in a world where people set their own legs. You know, I mean, you broke it. Hang on, honey, this is going to hurt. And I yank it, you know, and put it back in place so that we can wrap it and put something around it for a while. You know, that's the stuff that we just don't expect ever to happen. And in a modern, I don't know how to handle that. I'm not a pioneer. I didn't come across the country and figure out how to set a splint. You know, I don't know how to do some of those basic things.
Yeah, and it really is. I mean, part of it too is we don't plan on going days deep into the jungle either. You know, even when we go to the Amazon, I mean, it's a lodge that has facilities, you know, it's still a pretty safe incubated environment. It's not like we're backpacking with our own camping gear and figuring it out as we go. So,
and that's a good point because there are people.
I feel like we have a level of protection there.
There are people who do that. You know, I'm going to literally go off the beaten path and way out, and you don't have to go too far out to realize I'm in trouble. I live
in California. I've done you know 8-day backpacking trips through the mountains of the Sierra Nevadas. And at one point my dad got altitude sickness because we were about to climb,
Mount Whitney.
I can't think of it now.
Mount Whitney.
Yeah. Right. Actually, we were on the backside of Mount Whitney and it was like day 7 of our journey. And, we almost had to call a helicopter cause he got up and he was like, I can't even move right now. So, I mean, there's a level of, I've been through some of that and I have a level of confidence that, you know what, no matter what happens, we're going to find a way out of it.
And that's a good point because in California, we have all these canyons and stuff, they can't build in them. They don't want to build in them. We have lots of these wild interconnected mountain trails and canyon trails and stuff right next to suburbia. I live in suburbia, Orange County, and behind me is a deep Arroyo Canyon that starts up in the mountain up here and goes all the way down to the ocean. And so everybody goes down on hikes and bikes and everything down there. And every so often, last weekend included, there's a helicopter flying in because somebody went a little off the trail and decided to be adventuresome and fell or hurt themselves or was trying to do something dumb, climb down the trail where there was no trail. That kind of stuff happens in California all the time. And you suddenly go, oh my God, you know, how quickly you can get in trouble if you get off the trail. So you're kind of staying on the trail. You're following a wild trail, but you never go too far off the trail. That's what I'm
hearing. Yeah, and I think if it had been Michael and I, we probably would be more adventurous. We probably would do more hiking and backpacking and off the trail kind of experiences. But to your point, with kids, they probably wouldn't hold up. Like we were,
wouldn't enjoy it.
They definitely wouldn't enjoy it. No. But B, yeah, there's just this sense of responsibility that you do want to be within an hour or two's distance of modern medical care, just in case something happens. Whereas as adults, we can kind of take that personal responsibility for, hey, if something happens to us, we're big and we've got a good pain tolerance, we can probably work it out. But yeah, you don't want that same level of responsibility with little ones.
No. Well, so here you are resting and recuperating and just trying to get your strength back up. And the other thing I found curious is you've put off the Amazon for a week, maybe two even. You're slowing down. I know you have one schedule you got to keep. You bought a big expensive trip to go see the South Pole. You can't miss that one. Hell or high water, we're on that boat. Diarrhea or not, we're riding that one out. But other than that, you know, now you're getting into, it's starting to feel less like a scripted story and more like really a wandering adventure here that you can start and stop whenever you want.
We started, we were like, where are we going to go after we come back from the Amazon to Quito, right? Where are we going to fly? And we were like, okay, we're going to go to Buenos Aires. So we built out this whole plan. We're going to Buenos Aires, maybe Mendoza, and kind of work our way south towards Ushuaia, which is where our cruise leaves from, and just take a whole month to do it. And so we built out this whole plan, looked at maps, and then our VA is like, you know, Argentina is still closed for COVID, right?
Oh, like, no, I didn't know that.
We threw that napkin in the trash and got out a new one. And now it's Chile for a month. So we really do enjoy that kind of not booking too far in advance and figuring it out. And if a plan doesn't work out, like there's probably a reason, we'll make a better one. Yeah. And what's next, as opposed to being disappointed about that one not working.
Would you ever do, I only did this once in my life. You're getting all my little limited travel adventures out in this series as I vicariously travel along with you. One time, my wife and I went to the British Virgin Islands. I said, let's have no plans. So we got off the plane. We had no place to stay. And we thought, this is exciting. And everybody looked at us like we're nuts. You flew into an island and you have no place to stay already? What if it was booked? What if it was something? And so we just started asking people, where should we go? And they'd look at us like, what do you mean? Nobody gets off the plane and says, where should we go? Where do you want to go? You already have a reservation. You don't just fly into the Amazon and say, all right, any place around we can stay? No, you better have a reservation when you go places like that. Any thought of ever doing that, just waking up in some morning and saying, let's just go down to the airport. Let's just see what's over there. Let's just get on the first plane out. Where's it going? Ecuador? Great. Bolivia? Yeah, fine.
Yeah, I think kids make that complicated because we can't just hole up in a hostel. Like, if it was just Michael and I, you could buy bunks for $20 a night. And
right. Yeah, I have friends who fly, and they fly standby. They're just like, I'll just go airport and see what's available. But when you have, I mean, like if I had to sleep under a chair and at the airport, no problem. Like I could do that. But when you got three kids, it really does limit that possibility. I think.
Yeah. Like our kids get upset if they don't each have individual rooms. Like, so we need like a three bedroom wherever we're going. You're not going to accidentally stumble on that. But the other thing I think is COVID. COVID has made travel so much more complicated and difficult because it's not that you can just go to the airport and hop on a plane. Like, 2 days before that, but not more than 3 days before that, and not less than 24 hours before that, you need to go get a COVID test so that you have your results back so that you can show them to the airport security before they even let you into the security line. So a lot of the flexibility and freedom that I think pre-COVID travelers enjoyed has really been restricted. Everybody wants to know, are you healthy? Where are you going? And each country has its own requirements of what it's going to look like for you to go in.
So has this altered your thoughts in any way, shape, or form? Are you going to slow down? Are you going to speed up to make up for lost time? Are you going to be more conscious of health concerns along the way and double checking food and other things here? Or is this just a minor, just it happened and next week we're back where we were, back to what we're doing.
I think it's I think it's a minor speed bump. I don't think it's adjusted really anything kind of in the overarching scheme of things. We had planned on kind of slowing down after the Galapagos anyways. That was, we had everything booked up until the Galapagos. And then after that, we knew that we had basically 2 months to get down to Ushuaia. Right. So it really is, I don't know. I feel like it's taught us that we do need to make sure that we take time to slow down and take care of our needs, book longer stays. And we've cut out a couple countries. We were like, you know what, like Peru was still requiring a face shield. And we were like, oh, we don't want to go climb Machu Picchu with a face shield. So we nixed them. And we were like, you know, kind of how we made that decision is, we're going to do Machu Picchu at some point in the future.
Right.
If it's not this trip, then, you know, maybe 5 years from now, maybe 10 years from now. So Peru was an easy one for us to cross off, because we know that we're not going to not do Machu Picchu eventually. Right. So we crossed off Peru. We said Paraguay. Honestly, we didn't see a whole lot to see in Paraguay.
Yeah,
so that
Paraguay. Wasn't
too big
Who goes to Paraguay? Hey, I'm taking a trip to Paraguay. Yeah.
So we just kind of nixed a couple of countries. Was how we shortened and you know, extended this stay and shortened our length of travel. So yeah, it really is just being kind of loose with it. And I mean, I had, when we left our home on July 1st, I had the whole 2.5 years planned out, like what we were supposed to be, you know, in Bethlehem for Christmas of 2023.
That was on the list
and like all these different things. And just recognizing that we're just holding it with a loose hand, right? I mean, nothing's written in stone. If we don't go to Paraguay, then, you know, we'll still make it. We're still going to travel. We're still going to do our thing. It just kind of adjusts the itinerary a little bit.
All right, so Caitlin, take us out as you lay on your bed, thanking your blessings that there's a Walmart nearby or whatever it is, this giant Supermax kind of store here.
What it reminds me of is Tony Robbins talks about like the six human needs.
Okay.
And the first one is certainty, and the second one is uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And I realized we had so much certainty back at home that we were craving uncertainty. And so let's just go into the wild blue yonder and see what we can see. And then after 3.5 months of that, we're like, you know what? We really crave. We crave certainty.
Certainty, yeah. Isn't that that says it all? Yeah, really.
Yeah. So I think it's a matter of learning to find that balance and walk with recognizing that travel and adventure and excitement is fantastic, and there are really beautiful advantages to things like supermarkets and modern medicine and
a cup of soup and a cup of soup and a blanket and a good book. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, exactly. And so it's learning to walk in balance with the desire for change and new and excitement, but also recognizing having a solid foundation and giving yourself time to heal and be comforted it's a beautiful thing to have both.
Particularly if this is your life and not just a weekend adventure that you're going to gut through here. Well, and who knows, maybe along the way you'll find, as you kiddingly said, this is our forever home, just because here's where we ran out of gas. I used to wonder about pioneers that came across the United States, and I always wondered, why did they stop here in northern Minnesota? I'm from Minnesota. It's frozen up there. Who the heck just said this far and no farther? I was going to Oregon or California, but this looks just fine. I'm going to take that plot of land, and this is where I'm going to
And it was probably springtime when they did it. So they were like, oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, right. And I'm going to plant my family here. Did they run out of money? Did they run out of steam? Did they just decide this is it? That's part of me that wonders along the way. This place you're going to call home, is it check off 99 of the 100 things, or is it just the one that you never thought of that you didn't see coming? Or is it just the one, you know what, this is as good a place as another, here it is. Quito is our new home.
And you know, Ecuador would have a lot of really fantastic selling points about it. We went up to a little lake by the volcano, San Pablo Lake. Yeah. And it was higher than here, 10,000 feet.
Yeah.
So it's surrounded by mountains, but it's lush farmlands by the lake with the mountains in the background. We asked about snow. They're like, nope, we rarely ever get snow, maybe on the peaks.
It's like on the equator.
It's on the equator. So you can basically grow crops year round. Wow. They're known for their roses. And I was like, you know, we want a farm on a lake in view of the mountains like this.
It could check most of the boxes.
So when Michael's like, yeah, I found a guy who bought a flower farm in that area. I'm like, well, let's talk to him and see.
Listen to the story. It may not be the Galapagos. It may not be Bethlehem at Christmas. It may just be a rose farm in the middle of nowhere here. Who knows? Well, that's what keeps us coming back each and every week for this adventure. Take care. Take a rest. And we will take a rest with you as we take a collective sigh and say, yes, okay. It was all time for us to catch our breath because you're getting ready to start a big run here of some spectacular places. And then we'll see what comes next. So thanks for joining us. Feel better.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, folks. One more. As they go from certainty to uncertainty and follow the world all over the map, family, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Streaming live from the University of California, Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center. We're looking at one innovative way to live.